these attendants were losing their hair and having skin rashes and swollen eyes and brain fog and extreme fatigue. Like, they would get on the plane and they would become sick immediately and almost to the point of being disabled. And then the airlines, all of them would be like, we got them tested. And like, there's no one chemical that's over the limit that you can link to all of your symptoms. So it's not the uniforms and it's something else. And get back on the plane and keep working, or else we're going to dock your pay or fire you.
I'm Michael Gloster, and this is Fashion Cast. We're talking to fashion leaders and disruptors as we seek inspirational stories and expert insight into the world's most dynamic industry. Heard in over 70 countries, we're building an international fashion community based on fashion topics that matter. Please visit our website, fashioncast.co, to join our email list and learn more. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to part three of a three-part series on toxic textiles. On this episode, you'll meet Alden Wicker, award-winning investigative journalist, author of To Die For, How Toxic Fashion is Making Us Sick, and founder of EcoCult, the top-ranked international sustainable fashion information platform. Alden has been writing and reporting on serious issues related to the global fashion industry since 2011. She has authored stories and been interviewed by media outlets such as CNN, The Guardian, BBC, Vox, NPR, CBC, Fortune, and WWD, among others. In addition, Alden has won numerous journalism awards, including recently winning the Society of Environmental Journalists Rachel Carson Book Award for reporting on the environment. Alden Wicker is joining FashionCast from Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to FashionCast, Alden.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you here. You know, just looking at your education and your background, you know, it looks like you came out of the communications area, business administration, more general. How did you end up swerving into fashion and just concentrating on the fashion industry?
Well, I've always been a little bit of an environmentalist. I think I refused my first plastic bag when I was in middle school.
Okay.
Layers of all places. And so I didn't go to a school that emphasized sustainability, but when I graduated, the food movement was taking off and that really had a good impact on my life. And so this was in the era where everybody had a blog, and I started a blog around sustainable living, and it had everything, including fashion. So there was things about food, there was things about beauty, but nobody at the time was really talking about fashion. It was deeply uncool to mention sustainability in the context of fashion. Nobody was really doing it. And then, but I was interested in it because I wanted to know where not only my food comes from, but also my fashion and my beauty and all those things. So I was writing a little bit about it. And then Rana Plaza, the garment factory complex in Bangladesh, collapsed in 2013 in April.
Right.
And at the time, it was shocking. I mean, the pictures were incredible.
Yeah, it's still shocking.
Yeah, it's still shocking. And yet a lot of the younger generation hasn't heard of it, which is interesting. But it was this inflection point where suddenly people started caring about where their clothing came from. And so that content took over EcoCult, which I launched in 2013 as a more professional platform. It just took it over because it was a thing that I was writing about that nobody else at the time was writing about, and people were really interested in it. And so it sort of became my whole thing. And then I was writing for larger publications about fashion as well. I wrote something for Newsweek. This was back when Newsweek was still the Newsweek that I grew up with. Other publications. So it just became my thing. And it's endlessly fascinating. I mean, there's always something more to talk about when it comes to fashion. You have economic development and agriculture and labor rights and material science and all of these different things. So there's always something new to talk about, which is, I think, one of the reasons why I've been able to write about it for more than a decade.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about this website that you launched that you mentioned, EcoCult. So ECOCULT. And you said it was launched in 2013. And of course, it's quite comprehensive. And I hope everyone goes to the website. And it's obviously had multiple generations of use here and upgrades. So you've got 9,000 plus subscribers. It's one of the largest platforms of its kind, or if not the largest in the world. So you could explain just a little bit more. So you gave us the genesis and how you got to the EcoCult. But could you explain just a little bit more about that website? Because I really hope that listeners go to that website and utilize it.
Yeah, so EcoCult is meant to be a really scientific, fact-checked, informative platform for people who are interested in, it used to be just fashion sustainability, but now, of course, we're talking a lot about the chemicals in fashion, the health impacts that fashion can have on our health, and as well as I've been moving into home as well. So what are the things that you can do to renovate your home or decorate your home, and how might they impact your health? And so we have shopping guides. People love shopping guides. They just want to know what they can buy that's healthy for them. But then we also have deep dives for professionals. I just put up a report today on three different startups that are doing biodegradable. Well, they're not all startups. They're three different companies that are doing biodegradable polyester. What is the science behind it? Can we trust it? Is it going to help solve some of these problems? And sort of I go into depth. So it's supposed to be something that kind of gets past the hype that you see a lot in the fashion world. And frankly, some sort of light, bad journalism. And it's just this is the final word. And we always update everything as well. So, if you have a question about fashion sustainability or fashion toxicity or home toxicity, you might be able to find it on EcoCult.
Yeah, and I think that website in particular, here it is, 2024, and you've been maintaining this website for over 10 years. There's a ton of information. It's extremely well curated and well written, obviously. So yeah, I would implore anybody to go there, within or with outside the industry. Obviously you have done a lot of writing about sustainability. Then you recently released a book in 2013, To Die For, How Toxic Fashion is Making Us Sick, which has, met with all kinds of acclaim. This book is fascinating. And I mentioned to you before we started that I had just finished listening to the book and you narrated the book, which was really great too. And you did a great job. And then
thank you.
With regard to that, and I really do, because you mention in the book or you reference our last guest, which was Dr. Allison Matthews David out of Toronto, and her book, Fashion Victims. So this book is clearly, I think, in the same league. And I honestly believe it should be required reading for fashion colleges. It's just a really great example of investigative reporting. And I can't give you enough kudos. But how you fell into writing about this subject is in itself almost another book. So can you explain the genesis of To Die For and how you got started on this project?
Yeah. And I just want to say that Allison Matthews David's research, primary research, she went through physical archives, was so, so, so helpful for the book. So I just want to give a shout out to her and say that was pretty crucial, the work that she's done. But yeah, so 2019, I'd been writing about fashion sustainability for a long time, but I had never heard of fashion having hazardous chemicals on or in it. It was just something that nobody had ever talked about before. And at the same time, I was getting a little bit frustrated because it just, with food and with personal care products, you can say look, it matters where you buy your stuff because it not only impacts, the agricultural workers and the environment, but it'll also impact you if you don't know where your food comes from. But I couldn't say that for fashion. And then I heard about this lawsuit. This radio show called me and they wanted me to come on and talk about this lawsuit from Delta Airline attendants against Lands' End, who had made their uniforms because they said their uniforms were making them really sick. And I had nothing to say because I was like, I have no idea what would be in those uniforms. I've never even taken like a chemistry class outside of high school. So I was just like, I don't know what's happening, but it sent me off down this road. I ended up doing just a short article for Harper's Bazaar where I was like, hey, I think fashion can be toxic. And I sort of listed out a few data points, and I interviewed an American Airlines attendant who's been really outspoken, Heather Poole, and she was telling me about everything that was going on. And I didn't include that in the article because I was like, whoa, this is incredibly serious. Like, this isn't just like a Harper's Bazaar, like, hey, fashion could be toxic thing. This is like corporate malfeasance, huge cover up, just a scandal, people's lives at stake. And I realized that I wanted to do something bigger on this, like a big article. And so I, a friend of mine who was a book agent was like, hey, what do you want to write about? I think it's time you do a book. And I said, I want to write about toxic fashion. She said later, she was like pretty relieved because she was like, she thought I was going to be like, I was going to write another book that's like how to shop sustainably or something like that. and I went in being like, okay, I think there's evidence. Like, I hope this pans out, you know. I didn't want to write a book that was like, hey, yeah, it could be toxic, I guess, a little bit. And the more I pulled at the string, the more and more and more I found. And I realized like, yeah, this is a huge cover up and it's a huge problem.
Yeah, you opened up the proverbial can of worms here, which again, is great news, I think, in the long run for the consumer, not in the short run for the fashion industry, because like you mentioned, you know, it does seem obvious that there's some cover-up going on. But what's heartbreaking is these individuals that you meet, and, you know, the majority that you interviewed or spoke with were the flight attendants, but you can just extrapolate that to like almost any industry, whether you know, wearing uniforms, whether, and I think you mentioned a little bit about the fire, the police. I mean, you can extrapolate that obviously into the military. And then you just start to think through this. And then it's like, well, what the hell am I wearing too? You know? And
yeah.
So yeah. The book is just absolutely fascinating. You mentioned, well, I'm not a chemist. Well, you had to become a chemist. You had to become a physician. You had to become this textile expert. You had to become a lawyer. You have to be a pretty damn smart person to take on this project. It was just crazy. And then to do it, I think, to me, it's truncated. I mean, if let's, you know, I don't know, how many years did it take you to write? Was it 2 or 3 years?
I had a year to write it.
Did that include the research too?
Yeah. I signed the contract and then I was off and running and I had 1 year to turn it in. I think if I'd asked for extra time, they would have said yes. But I also think that my editor, who's wonderful, Michelle Howry at Putnam, which is part of Penguin Random House. I think she was like surprised at what I turned in because I think she was expecting something a little bit, I think it was more ambitious than she thought it was going to be. And I remember when I told her, I was like, hey, I'm going to India. And she was like, she literally said like, that's very ambitious. And I was like, I have to go. Like, I can't write about this without mentioning the garment workers. And I can't write about how this happens without seeing how it happens. So I took off to India and I'm really, really glad I did. I'm really glad I did. I think it would have been I think the book wouldn't have been as good if I wasn't like, hey, like I saw where they put the dyes on and I saw how it's affecting garment workers. But yeah, it was, I asked a lot of very stupid questions to a lot of very smart people to get to get to the point where I could like translate that into something that the average person could read and understand.
Right. And it's just so damn frustrating when just listening to the book, it's like, God, I got to turn this thing off because I'm just pissed off at, like, for example, the airline industry. You know, they were told over and over and over again by the flight attendants, we're having problems. And sure, it wasn't 100% of them, right? But even if it's a minuscule amount, you know, you would think and say, you would just say as a company, shit, something's happening to our workers and these uniforms are messed up and we need to kind of go backward and investigate. Or in the meantime, wear whatever the hell you want to wear, right? Because, you know, we had COVID and people are casual and we don't really give a shit as long as you have your little button on that says you're from Alaska Airlines or whatever. I mean, they didn't give them any alternatives. And that's what was just so maddening. I mean, and I kind of felt that you were a little frustrated kind of investigating. Am I right or wrong about that?
Yeah, I mean, I was. It was hard not to get angry. There was a lot of gaslighting, you know. What I found, and this doesn't just apply to the fashion industry, is that science can be used to illuminate or science can be used to obfuscate and protect corporations. And that's what they were doing here. And so, I mean, at first with Alaska Airlines, like they had no idea what was going on. And I don't think the maker of those uniforms, Twin Hill, knew what was going on. But there's this whole apparatus that swings into action when somebody's like, hey, this is like anything is making me sick. It's like, okay, well, we're going to pay a lab to test this for us, but we're going to choose what to test for out of tens of thousands of chemicals. And then we're not going to share the actual results. We'll just share that we think, according to the tests, everything is safe. And it's sort of like you didn't feel what you felt. You didn't see what you see, like what you saw. You know, it's like these attendants were losing their hair and having skin rashes and swollen eyes and brain fog and extreme fatigue. Like they would get on the plane and they would become sick immediately and almost to the point of being disabled. And then the airlines, all of them would be like, we got them tested and like, there's no one chemical that's over the limit that you can link to all of your symptoms. So it's not the uniforms and it's something else, and get back on the plane and keep working or else we're going to dock your pay or fire you.
Right. It's just this circular thinking. It's reverse common sense. And common sense would say something's in the damn uniforms and it's making these people sick. So let's just stop everything for a moment because this is not good. It's just going to get worse. And these people are becoming violently ill. And I don't want to ruin the story for, you know, future readers, but at least one person that you mentioned, you know, it seems very clear in the end when he passes away that it was from the toxicity of the uniforms.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear to me, and his surviving partner did attribute it to that. But of course, epidemiology is a crazy field. It's very hard to draw a direct line from the toxicity of something to a person's death. And on top of that, most of the health effects of these uniforms or clothing in general are chronic, low grade, not necessarily low grade, but chronic health effects. And so again, it's really hard. I mean, the flight attendants could say like it's the uniforms because they would all get them at the same time and they would start wearing them and they would have up to 20% or more of them would have reactions. And then they could talk to each other because they hang out all the time and say like, I wasn't sick before the uniform. Now a bunch of us are sick after the introduction of the uniforms. We're wearing them like for up to 24 hours. Like it's clear that it's the uniforms, but I think the average person, you would never be able to attribute your cancer or your autoimmune disease or it's even hard to attribute skin stuff to clothing because we wear so many different things every day. And sometimes these skin effects will pop up 3 days after you wear something. And so I think there's just like a lot of people wandering around thinking that they don't know what, like why they're having skin problems. Because the doctors are like, the doctors will ask you about everything, your detergents and your skincare products, but they won't ask you about what you're wearing. And I've heard from people saying like, my doctors had given up. They were just like, put me on steroid cream. They didn't know what it was. And then I read your book and I stopped wearing synthetic clothing and it went away. But we have this paradigm in the country where if it doesn't kill you, it doesn't matter. It's like, you have to have a body count in order to actually make change. We're perfectly okay with people walking around with debilitating chronic illness, because that just seems to be okay.
Well, there's 30 million people in this country that are walking around undiagnosed. And, you know, I was thinking about that when I was listening to the book. I'm thinking, geez, how many of those people, you know, kind of fall in this chemical kind of soup problem that, in effect, Alden Wicker not only has to educate the fashion industry about this, because they have no clue what's happening, obviously, or they do and they're covering up. But now it's the whole medical industry that's, you know, saying, no, this couldn't possibly happen, which they're really good at doing that too. So my question to you is, I mean, we have known about toxic clothing and apparel, at least in the past, for at least 100 years or more. We keep seeing things happen that have happened. And so the fashion industry isn't innocent here. Why is this still happening in 2024? Is this really just about money? I'm not sure it is. But what are your thoughts? Here we are 100 years later and we still have toxic apparel.
There's a few reasons why this is still happening. So what you're referencing is that when we first came out with petrochemical dyes, people had reactions. And then there was the mercury hats. So you have your Mad Hatter, arsenic green dye. And then, you know, moving on to we've known PFAS, a class of forever chemicals, has been toxic since the early 2000s. And yet we're still in this process of like, it's finally going to be banned in a couple of states in the United States for apparel next year. But it took like 20 years to get to this point. And so there's a few reasons why this is still happening. One is that for a long time, it was like, we were like, oh, well, we don't eat our clothing, so it doesn't matter what's on it. And like, oh, there's no evidence that this is a problem or it's affecting our health. Well, now we're finding out that we are eating our clothing because microfibers, even if they're like natural microfibers, they're coming off our clothing all the time. And we breathe them in and we ingest them in our house dust. And then also, of course, things that are against your skin, especially when you sweat, the sweat will pull things out of materials and onto your skin. And a lot of these substances can go through your skin into your blood. We know this. But because the fashion industry is not taken seriously by the scientific research university community, right? It's sort of like if you want to do a dissertation project or a research project or a lab project that has the word fashion in it, you just won't get funding or a grant for that. It's just seen as not a serious topic. And so we don't have a lot of research on it, which leads to this loop of like, well, we don't have any evidence, so this isn't a real thing. And so we're not going to research it. And so we don't have evidence for it. And what we've left the fashion industry to do is something clearly becomes a problem. And the fashion industry says, don't worry about it. We'll voluntarily take care of it. And that kind of worked for a while with the obvious stuff until we started outsourcing everything to countries that don't have the same regulations and aren't in our own backyard. And that really stopped working. And so now clothing is contaminated and dyed and finished with carcinogens and reproductive toxins, mutagens, just plain allergens and sensitizers, all of these different things. And even the fashion companies don't know what's on them because they don't even know who's dyeing their stuff down the line.
Well, this whole new industry that I think you have helped create about toxic textiles and the research behind it, I mean, I would consider you one of the leaders, if not the leader, and I think it's brand new. I think this is going to grow exponentially here. I hope so. We will be back with Alden Wicker in one moment after this message from Ome Organics, omeorganics.com.
Hi, I'm Christine. You may know me as co-host of Fashion Cast, but I'm also the founder and CEO of Ome Organics. I believe skincare should be simple. Our hyaluronic cream is all you need to nourish your skin morning and night. Sourced from the highest quality organic ingredients from around the world and manufactured in an FDA facility right here in the USA, this incredible cream works to firm, deeply moisturize, and smooth the appearance of your skin. Please visit omeorganics.com and use promo code FASHIONCAST to receive a 15% discount off your first purchase, and you will receive our monthly newsletter free. Now, back to the show.
And we're back with Alden Wicker. She is the author of To Die For, How Toxic Fashion is Making Us Sick. We were just talking about the book in general. One of the things that comes up in this book is multiple chemical sensitivity, or MCS, which is a health condition. And this is also related to apparel and manufacturing and wear. Could you just briefly explain multiple chemical sensitivity, or MCS as it's known?
Yeah, this one chapter, I mean, again, it was this other thing where I went really deep on it because I was like, I want to understand exactly what's going on here. And there is a lot of fresh research coming out. So multiple chemical sensitivity, some people call it toxicant-induced loss of tolerance. Some people refer to it at, or they get a diagnosis of mast cell activation syndrome. But all these things are like referencing pretty much the same thing, which is you've been, for some reason, your body has been traumatized in a way by something. It could be a massive dose of chemical exposure, could be something else. And it's sort of, I do compare it to somebody like a veteran who has PTSD, where, you know, what happened to them was real. They were in the field with, you know, bombs going off and gunfire, and now they're back in a safer place and fireworks go off and they freak out, right? And it's the body is doing something similar in these illnesses, right? So like a normal or safe amount of exposure to something like synthetic perfume, or just the smell of gasoline, or pesticides, or something like that. Or in the case of a lot of people with fashion, you know, certain dyes, certain synthetics, their body has a reaction, and the reaction can range from hives or rash all the way to, you know, not being able to like really function and having like not being able to, maybe not being able to breathe very well, or like brain fog, like all sorts of stuff, extreme fatigue, chronic fatigue. And so the reason why some people call it mast cell activation syndrome, or that's the diagnosis, is that you have these cells that are sort of defending the body against incursions from toxins and viruses. And when they see just a tiny bit of certain chemical compounds, they like freak out and start inflammation all throughout the body. And so it can come off to people who aren't experiencing this. And I think there's something like 1 in 5 people experience this, especially in the United States. It can come off to people who aren't experiencing it as people being like overly sensitive. It's like, you know, why can't I wear my synthetic perfume? It's fine. It's normal. It's legal. Like, it's enjoyable. And people are like, I can't be around that. Some people just know it as, I can't be around scented products, or like I react, or I have asthma that comes on when I'm around certain things or certain smells. And it's hard to get a diagnosis because there's not really a test you can do for it. It doesn't show up in allergy tests. It doesn't show up in blood tests. It's just sort of this thing where it's like you're getting a reaction, but like there's not really, a lot of doctors will say like, well, we've done the test and like we're not seeing anything there. So like maybe it's anxiety, or maybe you should go to therapy for it, which can be really crazy making for somebody who's actually having a physical reaction.
But somewhere along the line, someone recognized and actually named the condition multiple chemical sensitivity. Is this condition on the rise? Is there any data related to that?
It's hard to say because not long after that was coined in the 90s, it was sort of, it started being seen as like a not real condition, or it's hard to find a conventional doctor who will diagnose you with multiple chemical sensitivity. So it's hard to say, and because it goes by so many different things, it's hard to say if it's been going up that much. There haven't been like large scale studies, but today, Claudia Miller, who does research on what she calls toxicant-induced loss of tolerance, thinks it's around 20% of the population, reacts in some way to this after she's given, she has a test called the Queasy, where you like go through and answer a bunch of questions, and then it'll tell you like, are you sensitive to some of these things? And so according to the studies that she's done, somewhere like 1 in 5 people have some form of this where they react to exposure to certain chemicals.
Yeah. I mean, are you surprised? I mean, again, we're living in a toxic soup, you know, whether it's your food, whether now it's your clothing, whether it's your automobile, whether it's your home products, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess I'm not surprised from that. One of the things that was also very, very concerning, and again, I don't think people think this way, is, you know, what are the effects on children and how much greater are the effects of the chemicals used in clothing on children?
Oh, it's much worse for a few reasons. One is just children have smaller bodies. So a smaller amount of chemicals goes farther to affect their health. The other thing is that children are developing. And a lot of the chemicals that we're talking about are endocrine disruptors, which means they affect your hormones, which means they affect your, not just your reproductive system, but if you're a kid, they affect your development. And so being exposed to a lot of endocrine disruptors as a kid can have lifelong consequences. And your endocrine system it's not just about your reproductive system. It's also about your skin appearance and your energy levels and your heart and your risk of breast cancer and all of these different things that can affect your quality of life. And so, and also again, on top of that, you have kids who like, they do eat their clothing. They stick things in their mouth and they suck on them.
Yeah, of course they do.
Yeah. And then on top of that, they're crawling around and,
and carpet, toxic carpet and whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and there's research out of Duke where they test house dust in homes, and it doesn't matter what race or class these homes, the homeowners or residents of these homes are, the house dust contains a lot of microfibers and then all the stuff that we put on fashion as well. And so kids are crawling around and also pets as well are crawling around and like getting it on their hands and then like putting their hands in their mouths, and they're just getting more of it.
Yeah. And again, there's no discussion other than these kind of outlier discussions that have been going on. So again, I appreciate that. So given your research about all the different chemicals that are in apparel and based on our discussion, what chemicals, if you were queen of removing the chemicals from clothing for one day, what would you try to remove? What would you say, look, this has got to go?
I would probably come at that question from the opposite direction, because there are tens of thousands of chemicals that can be used and are used in fashion. And so, you know, right now, I mean, the short answer would be like, yeah, go look at the Okotex list or go look at the Affirm group list and be like, okay, those have been widely agreed upon. It's all voluntary, but those have been widely agreed upon to be the kind of things that shouldn't be in the final product. So that would be the short answer, because I can't list all of them. Like there's the ones that people know, the phthalates and lead and cadmium and arsenic and PFAS and flame retardants and these things like that. There's not a lot of flame retardants in regular clothing though, so that's good. But I was saying I would come at that from the opposite direction, because if I was made queen of this, at first I'd be like, well, I just want to know what's in clothing, period. And so I would love to, we have the technology to do this. I would love to know everything that's in the shirt I'm wearing right now. I would love to know, like, what was used to clean and scour the cotton, what exact dyes were used, what finishes were used, what any scented products were used, you know, to scent it in the store or elsewhere. I would like to know everything that at least was intentionally put on there, so that if I have a certain allergy, I could avoid that. That's another thing that I've been talking about with advocates who are saying, like, what can we do legislatively to help here? And I was saying, like, maybe just start with the allergens, you know, like, you, if you pick up food, it says, like, this contains peanuts, right? Or this was processed in a facility that contains peanuts. Well, I think people have a right to know that this contains formaldehyde, this contains nickel, this contains dispersed dyes. These are all known allergens.
Right. And I think in the book, you do mention, you know, look, there's no ingredient list, essentially, like there is for food. And even if you look at, you know, it'd be nice to have a QR code that just, you know, took you right to the ingredient list mm-hmm. for your shirt or your jeans or whatever. But that's not mandated either. The other question with regard to this potential labeling with all the ingredients is, you know, fashion is made and moved all over the world. So how do you track it? How do you keep it transparent? You know, who's in charge of that? Are those issues that need to be brought to the fore too with regard to identifying the ingredients?
Yeah, I mean, there's some companies that know where everything, like, they know their supply chain. And so it surprises people when I say, like, H&M was one of the first large brands to have a restricted substance list that they would give to manufacturers and be like, you can't use these chemicals. They also list publicly what their dye houses are. And there are other big brands that do that as well. Not the majority of brands, but there are other big brands that do it. It is totally possible to know who dyes your stuff. And even though a lot of these chemicals are proprietary, there's a trade secret to the chemical companies. The chemical companies can pass this information on each product through a confidential system to output a safety sheet, or just like a general ingredient list for the final product. That is possible. You have blockchain, you have all of these different technologies that can do that. So the reason why they're not doing it is it's just straight up price. It costs a few cents more to source from reputable, to first of all, know what your dye houses are and where they're located and what they're using. And it costs a few cents more to work with dye houses that you would be okay with telling the world that you're working with. And a lot of fashion brands do not want to pay a few cents more. And so they say that they care about this, but their actions sort of force these dye houses, or create the understanding that, you know, certificates can be faked. We're going to kind of look the other way. We're not going to look at what's going on. And if anything happens in the supply chain, we're not going to work with that company anymore. You know, they don't belong to us. And, like, this is a really unfortunate thing, but that has nothing to do with us. But it does. They create a culture around this. And there are some brands that have mutually beneficial partnerships with dye houses, and they know who they are, and there are some brands that don't.
So essentially, it sounds like toxic textile washing has just essentially taken over greenwashing. It's just another way to wash through the information and never really get to the point or correct anything. Yeah, and again, pennies on the dollar would go a long way. So I don't know how you feel about this, but given what we've been talking about, I just feel like the last few years were just kind of wasted on sustainability. And this seems to be so much more important and critical. I mean, both are really important to the industry, obviously. It's like the industry isn't even awake with regard to toxic chemicals and apparel. Do you believe that this is the most important issue facing the industry? And if not, what is?
Oh man, that's, you're asking me to make a pretty big value judgment. I'm not necessarily sure this is the biggest issue. Climate change is real, pollution is real. Labor is a huge issue, and exploitation. But this is the only issue where I can tell a random American that this is going to affect them personally and their family personally. It's just so hard for anybody. I mean, you ask the younger generation and they're like, climate change is real and like, this is ridiculous and we're going to fight it. And then they turn around and they're like, also look at my Shein haul. And it's just really hard to keep a garment worker that you're never going to meet and a river that you're never going to see in mind when you just need to get something that's within your budget to look cute at an upcoming wedding or for a job interview or something, or to keep up on social media as well. And so this is the sort of thing where I was like, oh, if like this, I mean, this is the thing that I'd already started buying more natural fibers before I started writing this book, because I just was getting like organic cotton yoga pants and stuff like that. But once you realize that, for example, if you want to have kids in the future, buying, you know, spandex, polyester workout gear might negatively impact your ability to have children, especially without IVF, which is very expensive and invasive, that is the thing that's going to stick in your mind and say, you know what, it is not worth it to me to get this stuff. And there's so many more examples. And so that's why I'm particularly passionate about this issue, because I just don't think we're going to make progress with people and change shopping habits unless we can show people a measurable impact on their own life.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I appreciate that, because I've been kind of beating this drum for a long time. It's a lot more difficult to change the behavior of the consumer than it is the industry. It's really the industry's responsibility to kind of step up here. And of course, on sustainability too. And they've washed their hands of that effectively too. So here's my point. What I'm asking you is, who outside the industry should be paying attention to this, but isn't?
Yeah. Okay. That's a really good question. I think that you mentioned earlier, doctors need to be aware that fashion can cause health problems. It should be on their list to check when somebody comes to them and they have health problems that could be attributed to exposure to
Thank
something.
You. Amen to that. Okay. Yes.
legislators, for sure. It's really crazy that federally in the United States, there's only 3 chemicals out of tens of thousands that are banned for use in clothing and only for children's clothing. There's nothing illegal about putting chlordane, which has been banned as a pest for use as a pesticide in the United States since the 80s, on clothing and selling it to adults. And I'd like to see more legislators paying attention to the impact of what's on our clothing. And the good news is that it can make a difference if legislation is passed. I just saw a study come out this morning, I think, about Prop 65 in California. And Prop 65 is like why you see those labels on everything that says, according to the state of California, this has reproductive toxic and or carcinogenic chemicals. And people make fun of it because they're like, it's on everything, you know? But the study showed that they looked at a short list of chemicals that were put on that Prop 65 list that said, like, if this is in your stuff, then you have to label it or you have to get it out. And the amount of those chemicals in our blood, and especially California's blood, but across the United States, have gone down since the implementation of Prop 65. Now, that covers food and beauty products and mattresses and everything, but it also covers apparel. And it's especially important for apparel because apparel companies do not want to put that warning on their stuff. It's people especially freak out when they get a little pop-up when they're shopping at Shein and it says like, this has these, and now they make you say what chemicals might be in there or are in there. And so it's made a huge difference. So I'd like to see legislators pay more attention, state legislators and federal legislators as well. And what else? Outside the industry, parents.
Okay. Those are all good. Parents, doctors, legislators.
Yeah. I think, you know, sometimes people see this and their reaction is, oh man, not another thing to worry about. But this is supposed to be a little bit more empowering rather than scary, because it's like, look, if you're the kind of person that buys and cooks Whole Foods and that, you know, I just cleaned out their medicine cabinet and their beauty cabinet, and you're trying to avoid, you know, flame retardant chemicals and finishes on your furniture and everything, don't forget about fashion. Like, this is another thing to add to that in your cleaning products. Like, if you're having trouble with your health and you've tried a lot of different things and it seems to still be a problem, try overhauling your wardrobe.
Well, fashion is probably the most insidious thing too, because like you said, you're wearing it, you don't even think about it. And this is the kind of stuff that's, you know, seeping into your skin, you know, and you're touching it. It's on you all day long and you just don't think about it in that way. And so what you're doing is just monumental, I think, for the industry. And of course, you just mentioned, you know, beauty and furniture. I mean, there's so many other areas that probably need to be explored, or in a way they have, but not to the extent that they should be. So, It's interesting and fascinating, and we would love to follow you in the future. Where can our listeners find Alden Wicker?
So I have a newsletter that goes out pretty much every Sunday. They can sign up for that at EcoCult.com or AldenWicker.com. EcoCult is hyper-focused on toxicity of fashion and home products, and then I have my freelance work that goes up on AldenWicker.com. As well as I have a very active presence on LinkedIn.
You're everywhere. You are everywhere, Alden. Yes. Like I said, I feel like I know you. We don't know each other, but I feel like I know you because I've been listening and I'm a big, big fan. Alden Wicker, it's been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you for appearing on Fashion Cast.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a really great conversation.
Thank you for listening to Fashion Cast. To hear more shows and join our email list, please visit our website, fashioncast.co. You can also join us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Until next time, I'm Michael Gloucester for Fashion Cast, the voice of fashion.